And welcome. It is Frankie Boyer, and joining us, and I feel like it's been a long time, and for our new audience, our new listeners on the Recovery News Network, Mental Health News Network, which we absolutely love that network, and our Audio One audience and all of our other stations that we are taking this with, WADK and all of you. Many of you have heard Patricia Gentile. Many of you, this is a new experience. And I will say that during the entire COVID mess and debacle between not getting through to the IRS, everything that had to do with taxes, with loans, with monies, with PPPs, with EDILs and IDLs and all of it, she was truly our guide. And guided us through this terrain that very few people really understood. Very, very few people. But what about where we are today? The IRS 2024 tax season. And, you know, she is a taxpayer defense and resolution attorney and a CPA combined. Two of them, NewEnglandTaxRelief.com. And welcome back, my dear friend, Patricia Gentile.
Hi, Frankie. This is great. This is exciting because, yes, I'm actually going to be able to provide information to your expanded listenership, if that's even a word in your broadcast industry. But this is exciting, very exciting, and thank you. It has been a while, and I'm really pleased. I'm always pleased to be on and work with you
Mutual. It's mutual.
Yeah, thank you.
My first question to you, though, and I just have to ask, is the IRS caught up? Are they back to where business is normal and okay?
No, that is the simplest answer. And I'm not saying that as my opinion. Actually, that's what part of my material here to provide to you and your listeners is that the Internal Revenue Service actually announced on January 8th that they're going to open the official start date of the nation's 2024 tax season, which means when the agency will begin accepting and processing 2023 tax returns, is Monday, January 29th. So that, this is from the IRS's newswire that I get sent to me, and dated January 8th. However, they actually, in this newswire, went on to say that they do expect more than 128.7 million individual tax returns to be filed by the April 15th tax deadline. And if you are a resident of the state of Massachusetts and the state of Maine, you have actually until April 17th. That's your legal filing due date because of a couple of what they call holidays, the Patriots Day and Emancipation Day holidays. So if a taxpayer also resides in a federally declared disaster area, you may also have additional time to file. Now, going back to your question, how do I say no is because on 2 days later, on January 10th, the IRS newswire that came to me stated that the National Taxpayer Advocate, this is Erin Collins, She did her 2023 annual report to Congress, and she described 2023 as a year of extraordinary transition for the IRS and therefore for the taxpayers. Well, what did that mean? Of course, that's a loaded
statement. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like I was clickbait on that. But the report does credit the IRS with substantially improving taxpayer services and developing plans to transform the taxpayer experience in the coming years. But it identifies, her report identifies paper processing as an area of continuing weakness. And she actually, her report actually is required to identify the 10 most serious problems that taxpayers are experiencing in their dealings with the IRS. And her report is required to make administrative and legislative recommendations to address those problems. One of the biggest things was, two of the biggest things that, but to go back to your question, one of the items I want to mention was delays. She noted in her report that delays in processing amended tax returns and taxpayer correspondence, despite the IRS's success in eliminating its backlog of paper filed forms 1040. They are still, as of late October of 2023, they're still well behind. And the other thing that they were meant, that she mentioned, excuse me, in her National Taxpayer Advocate Annual Report to Congress, is there's extraordinary, this is quote unquote, delays in assisting victims of identity theft. So this is sad. Here's on one side, they have geared back up in sending out timely collection notices to taxpayers. You owe us. You have a balance due. Pay by or else. Contact us to set up something. The revenue officers, which are the agents that are in the field, contacting taxpayers to get collection resolution and get them into a collection resolution program or get them to file their late filed, non-filed returns. You know, the collection area is, you know, up and running. They're appeals officers, their offers in compromise, they're, once again, like I said, the automated collection service. That's when you get the notices in the mail. The revenue officers are the ones that are out in the field, the in-person agents, collection agents. They're examiners or auditors. Everybody's up and going on that end. But here we are with taxpayers who need assistance, and that's what the National Taxpayer Advocate is about. It's a separate, independent department of the IRS. It's independent from anything else, any other department going on in the IRS, collection, audit, offers and compromise, appeals, you name it. It's totally separate. And her point is to be the taxpayer advocate. The IRS has set up this National Taxpayer Advocate area. But she has to do an annual report to Congress, and she is required to identify the 10 most serious problems and make administrative and legislative recommendations to address those problems. The other challenge she mentioned of her 10 were that telephone assistance.
I'm laughing because And right? we're almost out of time with this first segment.
Yeah.
But I'm laughing because you were able to have direct access during the COVID and still have being connected to the IRS and working with so many cases so that people don't have to wait. Now, as we get ready for break, I know that there are some exciting things happening that you're doing. I want you to share with everybody, and we'll do that when we come back. But before we go to break, how can people find you and give us the best resources of finding Patricia online, please?
Thank you. Yes. My website is newenglandtaxrelief.com. My phone number, 1-800-880-8388. This is definitely the time to reach out. For sure. Timing is always crucial.
Awesome. We'll be right back. I am Frankie Boyer. Stay tuned. And the rosebuds know to bloom in early May. And welcome back. It is Frankie Boyer, and we're talking today to Patricia Gentile. And Patricia Gentile is so absolutely familiar with everything that has to do with the IRS. She is a taxpayer defense and resolution attorney, as well as a CPA, newenglandtaxrelief.com. And Patricia, you were saying, go ahead and tell me, you were saying that you have some new breaking news information. So go right ahead.
Well, in terms of what I'm going to be doing is, in addition to what I currently do in defending taxpayers and creating resolution for their tax problems, I'm actually going to start a podcast, and I don't have a launch date yet, but it won't be too far in the future here. It'll be sooner rather than later. And I'm calling it All Things Tax Season. You know, taxpayers are definitely going to find this information helpful. But I'm also reaching out to the tax professionals who prepare tax returns during tax season, while they're also trying to help taxpayers resolve their tax problems. These notices from the IRS don't stop during tax season, just because there's this short window of 2.5 months. I mean, if the launch date for the 2024 tax season that the IRS announced is January 29th, we're only talking February, March, and the middle of April for the initial filing date. And notices keep coming. Notices, collection notices, demand for non-filed years. Tax years they haven't filed yet, audits, everything just keeps, the wheels keep working. And that being said, tax preparers, your CPAs, your enrolled agents, and I'm talking about certified tax preparers, and also tax attorneys such as myself, who tend to prepare for our tax cases, representation cases, you know, prior years that haven't been filed, we need to at least get them in for our clients before we even can start resolving and defending our tax clients. But I'm reaching out to the tax return preparation individuals and firms to help them, to mentor them to get through tax season while they're also still trying to resolve their clients or tax problems. So I'm really, this is all things tax season for the tax professional and for the taxpayers. So everybody's going to be on actually hearing, and I'm going to have guests as well as reports and of what's happening and the issues at hand and important topics. And so people can listen in and get what they want, get what they need, and tell your friends, tell your family, tell your own tax professional to listen in, and I'm here. I think it was time to start supporting the tax professionals and the community, our public community, during this tax filing season. I've been doing this for 40 years. It still feels insane. Anybody in the middle of it, people who are trying to get their information together, it's people trying to find a qualified, competent, trusting tax return preparer, tax preparers who are going through this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Most people dread getting those notices. Most people are afraid, put their head in the sand, and you know, they don't want to deal with it. And years later, it comes back to haunt you. So what Patricia is saying is, don't let those years go by. Let someone who's competent, who's an attorney, a resolution attorney, as well as a CPA, help you down that path and start sorting it one step at a time, so that you can get resolution and you can sleep at night without that horrible feeling in the back of your head, like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen to me? How am I going to, you know, how am I going to deal with this?
Oh, the anxiety is huge, Frankie. You said it. And
yes,
I want people to know that you do not have to look for a tax attorney. There are enrolled agents and CPAs who do tax resolution work in helping taxpayers resolve their tax problems. However, I'm there to mentor, coach, train any of those types of professionals who want to take on even more complex taxpayers' problems. So I would like what I do to have a ripple effect and reach out to more taxpayers to help them by working through
that makes sense.
Agents, and the CPAs. Yep.
That makes sense. Absolutely makes sense. And as I said, you were the first to talk about the loans, the EIDL, the first to talk about PPPs, the first to talk about what was legal and who could be taxed and how to work through the maze. And I'm sure that the IRS is still trying to figure out this entire COVID mess. I'm sure, in spite of what she said, even more in the PPPs and the EIDL loans, I'm sure it's still overwhelming to everybody.
You know what the big issue is, and probably some of your listeners have kind of heard this, is, and you probably have, Frankie, is the ERC, the Employee Retention Credit, employee retention credit for those employers that retained employees during 2020 and 2021. And they have been about a year and a half applying for the employee retention credit, and that there was so much fraud and abuse going on that the IRS stopped in September processing any more of these applications for the ERC until just December 31st, so they could get a grip on it. And and the last date I want is very important. The last date to file for this ERC, this employee retention credit, is April 15th coming up. Very important.
Okay.
This will be the last date anybody who qualifies can file. And
absolutely, this is important.
Please call me. I have some referrals of practice.
Give out your number, because we're almost out of time. Give out your number, please.
Yeah, 1-800-880-8388, because you want the right CPAs doing this application for you. There was too much fraud out there. And don't Google and look for a firm that does this. Give me a call.
Absolutely. Give out the website, too, please.
Yes, thank you. NewEnglandTaxRelief.com. I look forward to hearing from anybody.
We got to run. Thank you so much, Patricia Gentile.
Always a pleasure, Frankie.
I'm Frankie Boyers. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. And welcome. It is Frankie Boyer. Today's few segments are with Deborah G. Quant. This is such an important book. It is called Of Greed and Glory, In Pursuit of Freedom for All. And Deborah, I just want to commend you for writing this book on many levels, because as someone who does a cannabis show, I have been talking for years about men and women who may have only had a joint in their possession 20 years ago are incarcerated still today because they're black and brown, or because they didn't understand how the system worked. They couldn't afford bail, and they got caught in a system that is just, I mean, it's appalling that it's happening in this country. It's appalling. And you have statistics in this book that when I saw these statistics, I went crazy. I said, how is it possible that 2.5 million American citizens are incarcerated and 6,300 of them inside the Louisiana State Penitentiary? Tell us what it was for you to write this book, and why this has become such an important story.
Yes, and you're so right, Frankie. It is appalling. The idea that in what we call the land of the free, there are so many people who are not free, physically not free, not free in many other ways as well, but in terms of mass incarceration, physically not free. And
yes,
every time I go to see my brother or talk with my brother, I'm painfully aware that we remain separated because of this consensus to allow this kind of institution, which is barbaric, to continue in the midst of a place that we call a democracy.
Yes.
And so we need to be aware of this. We need to understand how it happens. We need to understand why it happens. And we need to be about the business of learning how we can prevent this and actually live in a country where we can actually say the land of the free and really mean that.
Absolutely. You're, first of all, an American, you're an African American and Africana independent scholar, writer, literary critic, specializing in the life and works of Zora. And tell us about Zora Neale, editor of the New York Times bestseller, Barracoon, The Story of the Last Black Cargo. You have been very, very outspoken about a lot of issues, but do share with us about your brother, please, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, my brother is a beautiful soul. And even though my brother has been incarcerated and locked up for more than 25 years or right at 25 years, he never stopped being a human being. He never stopped being someone who is aware of his dignity and his sovereignty. He never stopped being my brother. He made some mistakes, and I talk about that in the book, and he talks about it, and he very openly speaks to his responsibility in terms of why he came to be in the crosshairs of the criminal punishment system, and it had to do with being abusive to his fiance, and he very responsibly
you own that and has taken responsibility for correcting the kind of behavior that had him be abusive in the first place. And he talks about that. We've talked about that. And so being responsible and at the same time, for what he did do, behavior, that even he sees as reprehensible. He talks about, he says, you know, I can't blame anyone. Although we came up in a family where the idea was you're the man and you're in charge and you run things and people need to do things the way you say it. And so that was a mentality he was brought up with. But he says, I don't even blame that. I blame myself. I should have kept my hands to myself. But yeah, over and above that, taking responsibility for abusive behavior, is the fact that he was also charged with crimes he had not committed and found guilty of crimes he had not committed. And therefore, you know, is still facing this condemnation of life in prison at hard labor without the possibility of parole.
How is that possible? Deborah, how is that possible?
You know what? It is impossible, Frankie. And that's one of the things that, you know, I've come to understand is that this idea of slavery and mass incarceration and the incarceration of people with these extreme terms for life and without the possibility of parole.
Is there any way that anyone can help him?
Well, that's what we're going to find out. I mean,
25 years is a very long time for,
yes,
for not a major crime.
Right.
And not that, you know, not that whatever he did was not terrible, of course, but 25 years, people that murder are out in 10 years. I don't understand
how this system,
this penal system that we have, the injustices works. I mean, I find it, oh my God, it is so disturbing.
It is disturbing. And the thing about it is that, you know, the 25 years, if my brother were incarcerated for battery alone, he would have been freed by now.
Right.
But he was also charged with aggravated rape, which he and a, you know, doctor, the state's own doctor said a rape never happened, but he was charged with that and found guilty of a rape that the doctor said never happened, never occurred.
Oh,
and
my God.
It was that charge and that being found guilty for that, in spite of evidence to the contrary, that is what led to the life sentence at hard labor without the possibility of parole. And that happens. It happens, Frankie, because it can. It happens because there's a prosecutor who says, I'm going to throw the book at you. It
yeah,
happens
yeah.
because those yeah. those measures that are supposed to prevent that, whether it's a judge or a jury, that these measures did not mitigate that extreme sentence that was passed down based on a case that was made with the flimsiest of evidence. We have a system that allows this. That's our problem.
So we're talking to Deborah Plant. Her new book is out. It's called Of Greed and Glory. And she's writing about the injustices, including her own brother, of what is happening in our penal system in this country, which is absolutely appalling. And we need to talk about why so many prisoners are in Louisiana. That's another piece of the story. And then when we come back from break, let's talk about what you say what we can do, what are some of the changes, and understanding some of the amendments in this country, push for the removal of the 13th Amendment, understand that the 10th Amendment, all of that. We'll take a quick break. And Deborah, give us the best website, how people can find you, the work you've been doing, and the new book of Greed and Glory. Go ahead and give us the website.
Okay, I don't have my own website.
Okay, the book is available wherever books are sold, of Greed and Glory in Pursuit of Freedom for All. We'll be back in just a moment with Deborah. This is Frankie Boyer. Welcome back. It is Frankie Boyer. Such an important story. And Deborah, thrilled you're with us today, because this has been, I have been talking about this, Deborah, for years and years and years, of the inequalities of what is happening in this country.
Yes.
It's so sad. Please share with us what the 13th Amendment is for those of us that are not familiar with it. But you want to push for the removal of the 13th Amendment.
Well, not so much the removal of it, but the removal of the loophole that allows slavery to continue. The 13th Amendment is about the abolishing slavery. You know, so we are post Civil War, and we have these amendments that allow those of us who were enslaved to actually become citizens. And one of those is the 13th Amendment that officially says no more slavery in America or its territories. But in the middle of that same statement is a parenthetical statement that says that slavery is permitted as as punishment for crime. So there is a criminal exception loophole for slavery in the middle of this statement that says slavery is abolished. And so, you know, as Bryan Stevenson has said, slavery was not ended with the 13th Amendment. Slavery evolved. And that evolution is what we're talking about now. That evolution of slavery shows up as the convict leasing system. It shows up as sharecropping and tenant farming. And later on, we see it shows up as mass incarceration. And so just as one of the features of historical slavery was that people of African descent, Africans and people of African descent, were to be subjected to slavery for the rest of their lives, this is what these extreme sentences in prison in modern day America, this feature does the same thing. We Yes. are again looking at labor for the rest of our lives. And so this exception in the 13th Amendment, and various states have their own version of that. Several states have revised their constitution to take that exception out and have that constitution really say that slavery is abolished in that state. Louisiana is one of the states that had it on the ballot, but because of the languaging and the consequences of that, it didn't go forward. It wasn't passed. But it's being debated nonetheless.
Deborah, I'm sure you have pleaded with politicians. Do you have, I'm hoping, young, fresh lawyers that can help with this right now? Is that what's happening? Tell us where you are with the case with your brother.
Well, that is where I am. I have been petitioning politicians and lawyers and civic leaders. I've been both in the state of Louisiana and in terms of our own federal government. And so, because I'm looking at not only my brother, I'm looking at all of us who are subject to this kind of criminal.
Absolutely. 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 Yes.
So I'm asking, you know, various of our government officials to look at these amendments, to look at the 13th Amendment, to look at that amendment in the state constitution, to look at the fact that we call ourselves, you know, a land of the free, but all millions are in prison, thousands are jailed and caged every day, and it has to do with money. And we cannot have, why do we have a so-called criminal punishment system that basically targets poor people, people of color? We need to understand how the past informs the present. And we need to understand why that continues to happen. One of the bottom line things we can look at is the question of labor. And we know what labor looked like, you know, in colonial America. That looked like Africans and people of African descent being caught in the wheels of production and being exploited until they die. And yes, this is the same dynamic that we have in these prisons where people are locked up for life without the possibility of parole.
It's just, I'm just so thrilled to do this interview, because that to me is unconscionable. That to me is not anything that this country stands for. Right. And I think that people need to understand what's going on in Louisiana as well as other states in this country, but Louisiana especially. And the fact that this has been going on for 25 years is even more disgusting and disgraceful. And I just hope that you keep us posted on how this unfolds for you and your family with your brother, because this is, I mean, and when I do my cannabis show and I talk about the people that are incarcerated for mm-hmm. one joint that decades mm-hmm. later are still in prison.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, we've got to really, it's almost as though we have to shake the penal system in this country, just shake it out right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and you know, Michelle Alexander talks about that whole, war on drugs, that is also part of this mass incarceration.
Absolutely.
Of poor people and people of color. And she, you know, her book titled The New Jim Crow. It's like this is how it's used as a means to impose a certain kind of order within our society, and that order keeps people of color and people who, you know, are of low income.
You don't have the resources. That's right.
That's right. Exactly.
Deborah, I'm almost out of time, but it really was a pleasure talking with you. The new book is out. It's called Of Greed and Glory in Pursuit of Freedom for All. And please come back and keep us posted on your brother. Please, please. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you so much, Frank.
I won't dance. Don't ask me. I won't dance. Don't ask me. I won't dance, madam, with you. My heart won't let me.